Hello, you're listening to a podcast of the best bits of Breakfasters for the week ending Friday the 30th of January. We're broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Wurundjeri Country, Australia. Coming up on this podcast, Daniel takes us through a Cosmo quiz to get to know our brand new Breakfaster, Bronwyn Cass. Welcome to Breakfasters, Bronwyn.
Thank you. I spent the week winning the hearts and minds of Melbourne. The other thing that happened this week is the only person allowed in the studio with secateurs, Digger, came through to give us a couple of tips on how to save your plants from the heat. And also Olympic gold medalist and all-round show-off Matthew Mitchum came in to talk about his new play Afterglow for Midsummer.
We had a back and forth with film reviewer Megan McHugh about the new ping pong drama Marty Supreme. And to close, we run through some dubious hacks to get multilingual. Triple R. We are coming to the close of the auspicious first show of Breakfasters for 2026. Oh my God, Bronwyn Cass is here.
Hey.
How are you feeling?
I reckon I'll come back.
Nice. What about the names? Because, you know, Jason Moore, Daniel Burt, Bronwyn Cass, and Jace's name is perfect as is. Mine needs a bit of work. And if I was thinking if we turn you into the definite article, it would be Birdie, Jace and the Cuss.
I like it. More cuss.
Yeah, more cuss.
Bert. More cuss.
More cuss, Bert, please.
Cuss more often. It was interesting, on my first days of Breakfast in 2019, Jez, Geraldine Hickey, did a quiz. I think she ripped it from BuzzFeed. And it was a which Powerpuff Girl are you?
Right.
I can't remember.
Carrying on with the tradition, you found the quiz?
That's right. I was either Blossom or Bubbles or something. But there is a Cosmo quiz.
Great.
Yeah.
Great start.
And so this is, they flag it as 75 questions to ask new friends.
We've got time.
Yeah.
75.
All right.
Go.
And you've already answered the first question.
What?
Right. Oh.
Have you been to any concerts? If so, which ones? Melissa Etheridge
kicked it off up
big.
The top.
That's big.
It's big, yeah. Sorry if anyone was hoping I'd be cool.
I think Melissa, that passes for cool.
She passes for cool.
It's badass.
It's pretty badass, yeah.
Double park and bourbons.
Yeah.
Okay, beach or mountains?
Beach or mountains? Oof, beach.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird. Why would anyone say mountains?
I guess they're nice.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose, from a distance maybe.
What now, if you're at a beach where you can see mountains? Hey.
Well, exactly. Or sand dunes, do they count? Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
But you started the day with tea.
Well, started the day with coffee. You just didn't see that one.
Dead set.
But I didn't want to be jittery.
Right.
So then I went on to the tea.
Where was the offer? Did you get an offer of coffee, Jace?
Well, it's a bit hard because I made it in my house.
You stayed at home?
Tomorrow, I'll bring you a coffee.
Good for you. You stayed, really, you hung around at home for a while.
Yeah, I got up early.
Yeah.
I was nervous. I was up at like 4.
That's good. That's good.
Putting about, made myself a coffee.
But what about the people who live with you? They want you rattling around?
No, but she was up.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's so supportive. That's
yeah,
really lovely.
I'm actually pretty spoiled.
Damn.
I don't know. I don't think that's going to last to the end of the week, but that is what happened today.
Mm. That's really
awesome.
Special. Iced latte, pretty good.
Iced latte.
Yeah.
Are you
fancy.
Serious?
I'm
Hang on, you got
serious.
That made for you at 4 o'clock in the morning?
No, I made it for myself.
Okay, right.
But yeah, no, that would be crazy.
That's the real deal. Yeah. And so have you been a barista before?
Yes, I have been, but again, not a good one. It was all takeaways. It's just like people, I mean, whatever you're ordering, you're getting a latte.
These ones, yeah.
There's a lid on it, you can't tell.
These ones taste better if you have your first sip after you've walked around the corner.
Yeah, and never come back. Yeah. Yeah, do you want a latte or do you want a latte with chocolate on top? Let me know.
I have a question. Do people who make latte art, do they do the latte art and then feel like we're, you know, stifling a baby in the crib by putting the lid on of a takeaway, or do they not bother with latte art for a takeaway?
You don't bother with latte art for a takeaway. I mean, that said, I can't do latte art. But mm-hmm. No, you'll notice if you go, you get it handed. You know, you're in those cafes where you have to put the lid on yourself.
Oh, that's right. They say have a look and acknowledge
look.
This.
Yep.
A moment of, yeah, honouring.
Of brilliance.
Yeah, exactly. Are you a night owl or an early riser?
Early riser.
Well, yeah.
Well, that is, thank God. Now. Yeah, I am now.
What do you do to wind down after a long day, asks Cosmo.
Well, thanks for asking, Cosmo. A glass of wine and some shit TV.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What wine?
Into the Pet Nats.
Yes. I was hoping for that.
They're fun. They're,
little Pet Nat knockoff.
Pet Nat knockoff.
Yum.
Yeah. Delish.
What about the sediment? Do you get the sediment?
Yeah, hoover it up.
Knock it down.
Have it all, yeah.
Yeah.
If you drink it fast enough, you can't tell.
Mm. If your pet could talk, what would they say about you?
Go, leave me alone.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
What was your least favourite thing about where you grew up?
Oh. God, sorry, I just paused because the list is so
nothing.
Long. But no. Great town, love the town. The public transport is so bad. I went back there recently staying at my mum's place, and she went to work, and then I was like, I can't go anywhere.
Mm. Yeah, you're stranded.
They're so stranded. It was like a 40-minute walk to the nearest shop in 30-plus degree heat. And I was like, I can't, I'm done.
So how long are you waiting for an Ipswich bus?
Half an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rightio.
Minimum, if they show up.
Who was your childhood celebrity crush?
Angelica Houston.
Angelica.
Yeah, from... in The Witches.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
kept
so
that to
good,
myself,
actually.
But yeah.
Did you cut out from magazine or anything? Or
No. I just knew that I liked her. Didn't know why, but. It all makes sense now, obviously.
She plays a bombshell in Manhattan Murder Mystery.
Oh, I haven't seen after.
God, she's such a good character. What else are we going for? Your go-to snack as a kid?
Two slices of bread, rip the crust off, roll it up into a ball, eat it like an apple.
Oh, what?
What's
that is...
going on?
Mm.
You're an inventor.
Yeah.
That's an invention.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And then, like, nibbling it or, like, taking chunks out of it?
Take a big chunk out of it.
I love that. What was the feeling usually?
What do you mean?
What was the feeling of the...
Nothing. Just plain bread rolled up into a ball.
That's awesome.
I just hallucinated that there was filling. I thought there had to be.
No filling. Oh. Don't have time. No time for filling.
Oh, my God. And what is one thing on your bucket list?
One thing on the bucket list... retiring early, that would be...
Oh, that's good.
There I was thinking it was going to be being a breakfaster.
No, how do I get to the end of being a breakfaster? loving it, but when do I put my feet up?
So you can harass your pet and...
So, yeah, exactly.
And shovel them. Gross little bread balls down your gob.
Oh. Don't knock the bread balls till you try them.
Yeah,
I should just pair a bread ball with a Pet Nat tonight. We might be, see how that goes down.
Dipping.
Yeah.
Are you talking like Cape Seed loaf or are we going for like a...
Oh, please, this is the 90s in Ipswich. We're talking home brand white sliced.
Full supermarket.
Yeah. Full supermarket, absolutely.
All right, well, that's it. Are we wrapping up here, Chase?
I reckon. I actually had one more quiz for you, which Phoebe Crean passed this one, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's your junglist name? So,
what is a junglist name?
Yeah, so, you know, like reggae, junglist. Oh. What's your birth name?
Bronwyn.
Oh, sorry, what's your birth month?
Oh, August.
August, okay. So we've got Babylon for August, Bronwyn is Rebel, and K is Unit. So Babylon Rebel Unit is your junglist name.
Do you know what? I think I'll pull it off. I'm going to legally change it.
Supporting Melissa Etheridge on the next tour.
Yes, please. Where are the tickets? Sign me
up. Oh, my God. At BabylonRebelUnit.com.
Yes. That's it.
On all your socials. are we out of here, Chase? Am I wrapping up here?
Yeah, I reckon we've run out of time.
Okay.
You've been listening to Breakfasters, Daniel, Chase and Bronwyn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Joining us
thanks
this
for
morning.
Having me. I don't know why I keep saying that. I'm like, please.
Thank you. Triple R.
Dirt. It's where you grow your plants. Dirt. Hey, you got some on your pants.
Can you stop singing about dirt?
Digger's whacked on the work boots for the first time in 2026 to get down and dirty with us on air. Morning, Digger.
I know. Look how tall I am. tall.
Thongs? What do you get around in?
Yeah, usually? Thongs or Vans. Mm. Yeah, literally the last day of work I kick them off and I don't see shoes again. My plantar fasciitis is sorted. It's bloody magic.
Barefoot would be you're grounded.
You're grounded and just stretching it all the time, just clenching your toes on stuff, stretching it out. Anyway,
do you mow the lawn barefoot or in thongs?
Sometimes with the thongs.
Yeah. Lawnmower should have a stubby holder next to it.
No, that's what a hat's for.
It's been a pretty hectic summer, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Weather-wise, so we've been away for most of the summer, so I did a lot of what I thought was a lot of prep in being able to leave the garden for a hot summer.
Yeah, right.
I would rate my success maybe at a 90. Okay. We had a few losses. Jace, guess what my losses were?
I'm going to guess cucumbers and surely not tomatoes.
No. Bloody watermelons.
Damn it!
The whole lot. I had about 8 watermelon seedlings out. So for non-regular listeners, I've never really tried watermelons and I was going to give it a crack this summer. So I bought the seeds, sowed my own seeds, raised my own seedlings, got them into the garden. It was about, probably late November, early December last year. Followed all the instructions, how to do it. And, yeah, we were away for at least, 3/4 of January, late December, and they cooked. So I'm just assuming that it was as hot in Melbourne as it was in rest of Victoria.
Well, I grew up in Queensland and we used to have watermelon vines because we would just spit out the seeds in the backyard.
And they would just pop up.
Yeah, so we did nothing. And you put all that effort in.
Anyway, so that's the end of the gardening. Rob's going to take over down and dirty.
Spit them out there, yeah.
Maybe we need to just spit them out or back them out in the garden.
It was, I think we, I know a nectarine tree which was looking absolutely pumping. I thought, we are on here. This is a huge haul. And then I think there was just some hot days. It just fried everything.
And that's exactly what can happen in these super hot days, especially for perennial plants and trees in particular. Mm-hmm. Being that, they have a fruiting cycle that goes for decades. If at any point they're like, if we hold all this fruit, it's going to be detrimental to our life, just dump it. And we'll try again next year. And especially the stone fruit are renowned for it. They'll just dump everything. They might thin 10% on a warmish day. But if it starts to get super hot, it's like, just dump 60. Just let them go.
So interesting. So there's no sunk cost fallacy in nature.
No.
Yeah, they know when to give up.
They know when to give up. Yep. So eucalypts do the same. They're shedding leaves all the time. How shit was yesterday? Do we need to, that's filthy.
That's too much.
We need to march. That was bad. It was just bad.
But on another day.
Yeah. it's going to be about 27th. That's just too much. At 45 degrees and a bit of wind, you even see a lot of leaves in the air because that's just trees just shedding leaves. Like we can't take up enough moisture to keep all of these going. We're just going to dump it. And when the weather's good, comes back, we'll grow some new ones. So, 90% lost all my watermelons, but some strategies for others, that worked for us. Bigger pots, outdoor pots, I put them in under the trees. I've been screaming about planting trees for years. It's really important that we plant trees, and I'm fortunate enough to have some banks of trees that provide a lot of shade. So all my younger fruit trees, all that kind of stuff, just put them in clusters under the shade, absolutely fine.
In the pot.
So they're like 90% shade. But we were away for 4 weeks and they're absolutely fine. People think, it's too much shade, they'll cark. It's like, 45 degrees worse than being in shade.
Yeah.
So if you've got artificial shade from your next door neighbour's, apartment block, just pop them all in the shade if you can move them.
Makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
It's a massive difference. And even just the clustering, even if they're going to be in sun, clustering your pots together so that you're diminishing the surface area that will evaporate moisture.
Oh.
So you do one big ring rather than 25 little rings.
Right, so instead of residual heat or something, it's like collective cooling.
Yeah, it's collective cooling, so it actually can cool the air through it. And so then what I found in the old days is getting bottles of water and freezing them and sitting them on the surface of the pots, and that acts like the air conditioner. And then the air cools down in between them. And you'd be surprised, it'll drop it by 5-8 degrees,
yep.
Which for a lot of plants, that's all that they would actually need to survive.
That's Carl or no Carl.
Yeah. Yeah, desperate man.
Have you, what's your most, or do you have any highlights of a heroic resurrection of something that was on the brink of carking it and you dragged it back?
A pot of ginger. It was my favourite terracotta pot. So this is an edible ginger. And I put them in there. It was early. So I literally just started a little knob of ginger in there. And they went fine for a few years. And then obviously a lack of water and it didn't come back. Now it is, you know, perennial, so it will die down and then come back up. And then it didn't come back up for about 3 years, but I loved the pot, so I just left it. So it was just soil and a beautiful terracotta pot. And I don't know what the catalyst was. Maybe I'd chucked some, you know, special bloody holy water on it or something. But then 1 year it just came back. It was like 2-3 years of nothing. It's like, oh, I've cooked it, it's dead. And then it's come back again. So now I've got it and it's absolutely beautiful. I've repotted it. But yeah,
Is it the pot? Strength. Do you think anytime something dies, now you just put it in that pot.
In that special pot, maybe. In the special pot. Maybe it's the, you know, the last covenant.
And what's your watermelon seedling? Because there's a listener whose first time growing watermelon planted at the time of lots of others, but it was the possums what done them in, ate them on the first night.
Well, that's really. Yeah, I feel for it because being at the ground level, possums coming down to the ground, it's not, you know. That's harsh. You know, usually it's across the top of the fence lines and, you know, they're eating my avocado at the moment and taking a fair bit off that and a fair bit off the apples.
I know you're unsuccessful, but are there seedlings that you sought out for watermelon in particular?
I bought seed. I bought packets, you know, about three different varieties of seed.
Yeah.
So I didn't use the whole packet, so I'll try again next year with them. It's just that, you know, they were cooked. They were absolutely fried. There was nothing else that got them. You could tell that they were just fried.
So is it too late? What should we be doing in extreme heat? Is it because part of me thinks, oh, gee, what can you possibly do?
Yeah, not a hell of a lot. So, yeah, it's all about protection. So even though calendar-wise it is time and I'm in the coming weeks teaching a whole lot of stuff about summer pruning of fruit trees, I'm going to be telling my students, like, well, this is how you do it, but I would hold off until the super hot stuff passes because we need that shade. So if you go in and pruning your trees now, you're going to get a lot of sun into the middle of the trees potentially, and that can give sunburn. My avocado's got on one branch got a bit of sunburn because I'd opened it up a bit too much last year. Obviously watering, that's the thing. You know, take the pleasure of the Sunday, get out in bare feet and, you know, your Foster's singlet and just do a whole stack of deep soaking. Think of it as therapy. Get up early in the morning, as you guys do every morning. get up with breakfast, just put the radio on your headphones and get out and deep soak in the morning. That's probably the best thing you can do.
Okay, and remind us, deep soak, that's not just regular watering, is it?
No. So the whole idea is that you do it less regularly, but you do it deeper. So if it means that you're going to be out there and you take very, very slowly, almost like a squirt at a time on a pot, just go, one squirt. And then when that soaks down, give it two squirts. And when that draws down, three squirts. If it takes you 10 minutes to water a big pot, then so be it. Mm. You don't want the water coming out the bottom because that means that the potting mix actually isn't fully hydrated. The water's found that, you know, the line of least resistance down the little air pocket down the side of the pot, just pouring out the holes. Mm. So do it really, really slowly. If you're doing it on your garden beds, you know, get the soaker hose out or the old, you know, sprinkler and turn it on really, really low and then go out and move it every half an hour.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing this but of an evening.
Mm-hmm.
My thinking was like it will help stop evaporation if it's later in the day or out of the sun at like 9 o'clock at night,
I guess. Yeah, better to do it at any... Yeah, you know, better to do it than not to do it. Okay. Only difference is, you know, if you're doing it at night time, the plants aren't actively using it. So you are watering the soil, which is great.
Okay.
So, but whereas if you water in the morning, just like us, get up in the morning, have a drink of water.
Yeah.
You want some hydrate because when the sun's not shining, they're not actively taking it up.
Yeah.
How'd you go with bindies this summer?
Yeah, all good. Our place was cooked. And I've slowly been getting rid of lawn and grassed areas over time, so all good. But we were up in New South Wales, so the dog is just covered in bloody seed pods and bindies and all sorts of stuff.
Right. If you get bindies, if you notice more bindies in there, what does that tell you?
Soil's probably dry because there's no other we've got so much other competition, in especially in Melbourne and Victoria for bindies. So, yeah, if it's super dry, they'll win. So, hydration.
Ah, right. God, they're bastards.
It's like, I don't want to see a generation that never experiences. Screw you, bastards. You little, you know. Softies.
And for the new year, is there anything that you to etch a sketch of the year and go, because I know I asked you if you've got a new pair of boots, you don't. No. Is there anything that you actually go, all right, we're on here?
I did put a new pair of blades in my secateurs.
So,
I don't know if you can see the
shiny.
It's like reflecting.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so I splashed out and got a brand new blade for my secateurs to start the year.
Oh, love it, Digger. All right, well, this is very exciting. And we'll take more questions later in the year on 0466981027. But in the meantime, what a treat to have you back.
Pleasure to be back.
Triple R. Matthew Mitchum is an Australian retired diver, trampoline gymnast, author of the memoir Twists and Turns, cabaret performer, MC and speaker, who in 2008 won gold in the 10-metre platform at the Beijing Olympics, which, among other record-breaking achievements, made him the first openly gay man to win an Olympic gold medal. Matthew was in town, starring in the play Afterglow, a chapel off chapel for Midsummer, and after its critical success off-Broadway and performances around the globe, the implausibly flexible performer joins us now. Matthew, welcome to Breakfasters.
Wow, what an introduction. Implausibly flexible. I mean, I have heard that before, actually.
Is it wrong?
You hit the water at 60 kilometres an hour. Did I just make that up?
It's something like 60 kilometres, 60 miles. I don't know. Who knows? I've been in the UK for like 7 years now, so now I just can't tell which is imperial and which is metric.
Yes. What took you to the UK?
A boy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Taylor's oldest time.
Yeah. And does Afterglow, the play, is it reminiscent of any, do you chime with it in any way?
Oh, yeah. I've done a lot of, I guess, learning about life and relationships over the last, well, I mean, I've been doing relationships for the last, how old am I? Over 20-something years. But, you know, particularly in the last sort of 10 years, being more interested in different relationship dynamics. And that's what Afterglow is about. It's about, you know, polyamory, open relationships. And I can't really think of any sort of anything else in the zeitgeist, like any other play or something like that, that actually tackles open relationships and polyamory and that sort of thing. So, you know, and it's not just like, it's not just a celebration of, which obviously there are parts that are, you know, very celebratory of, but it also unpacks kind of the nuance of it and the complications of it. And I guess that's what makes for a good play, because it's got that drama in there inherently. So I guess, do I relate to it? Yes, because a lot of the complications are around communication and, you know, what happens when communication is good and what happens when communication starts to break down.
Yeah. I'm also thinking about, you know, life is messy, relationships are messy, and yet here you are, you forged an identity securing perfect tens. And I'm wondering how you reconcile the perfection with maybe even the fluidity of performance and allowing yourself to make mistakes.
That was something that that was a journey that I went on years and years ago when I started doing the cabaret shows. My show Twists and Turns was at Chapel of Chapel 12 years ago.
Really?
So, you know, and that was quite early on in my journey of getting into performance. And I absolutely loved it because it was such a stark contrast between, you know, having to do everything perfectly right at that moment, which in some ways I've always considered diving to be a kind of performance, because you get at the end of the platform and you have to do that thing right there at that moment for the judges, for the audience. I mean, the judges are the most important thing because they're the ones that give you the scores. But, you know, the fact that you have to get there and do it at that moment, I always considered diving to be a performance. And what I loved about stage and theatre and particularly cabaret was that there is so much beauty in mistakes, and that you can, you know, and that the audience love those. You know, when you make a furphy, and you play with that, and then that kind of evolves into something, you know, a bit of audience interaction or something, you know, like everybody's then in on the joke, and that creates little moments of gold that you otherwise would not have expected.
That, so happy accidents that you can't replicate.
Totally. Love happy accidents.
Well, thinking of happy accidents, you were somewhat, I don't want to use a showbiz term necessarily, but discovered, correct me if I'm wrong, at your local pool kind of showing off.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, what is that sliding doors moment? I mean, your local pool happened to be a place where, diving was a big deal.
Yeah, so I grew up in Brisbane, and the Chandler Aquatic Centre, the Sleeman Sports Complex, just happened to be, I think that's where the Goodwill Games were in 2001 or something, you know, and there's, anyway, so it's an old-ish pool, and that just happened to be where the National Training Centre for Diving was. So the AIS for diving was based at the Sleeman Sports Complex in Brisbane. And, you know, I was living in the suburb next door. Like my mum used to use the pool as kind of all day daycare. Just drop me off first thing in the morning, and then I would kind of do the, you know, you drop in your 40 cents and then you dial the number and then you hang up before they pick up. And so, you know, that was how I, oh my God, wow, yeah. So that was how I indicated that I was ready to come home at the
wow.
end of the day.
Yeah, love that. Oh my God. And so, do you have a theory now about, gee, these happy accidents are so influential in a life, do you not think about it deeply?
It's about creating your own opportunities, I think, and, you know, making the most of kind of what happens to you. So, yeah, I mean, because I was a trampolinist already, you know, and the diving boards used to be way, way, way back in, you know, the last century, the boards used to be open to the public at certain times before OH&S shut all of that down. you know, when the boards were open to the public, everybody was, you know, doing bomb dives, and I was showing off doing double flips into bomb dives. So I think right from early age, I was always a show off, you know, like always performing for people because, you know, gay. and then, yeah, one of the national coaches just happened to be walking out along pool deck at the time when I was doing one of these double flips and was like, how do you know how to do that? Would you like to try diving? And so the very next week I started in a youth, like in a development program, a development tier of the Australian Institute of Sport. So I guess it's just about creating opportunities and then making the most of what, you know, what comes your way.
Mm. What about difficult choices? I mean, I'd imagine there's paths that you could choose that are cushy, but instead you challenge yourself, appear, you know, you're maybe in a place that is kind of, London's not particularly, it doesn't make it easy on anyone. It's pretty. So I'm wondering about a philosophy of challenging yourself.
Yeah, growth is where your comfort zone stops, as the trite saying goes. And I think, you know, I personally have a predisposition for, you know, for low self-esteem and for mental ill health. And so if I don't have something to look forward to, my life feels like it's stagnating very quickly. And, you know, just left alone with my own company, with my own thoughts, with nothing to actually look forward to and work for. I guess it's kind of like, you know, the interview that you had before, where it's, you know, any lack of anticipation, lack of, you know, like something to look forward to. You know, yeah, I become quite morose.
Yeah,
so
right.
Yeah, it's I do enjoy learning, and this could also be my, you know, as you might have, I've changed this sentence three times. I was just about to say I have quite severe ADHD. You know, so I guess I do also get bored of things quite quickly, and so I need a lot of stimulation to stop myself from becoming, I guess, self-destructive.
Yeah. Well, I read that to drag yourself out of a drug culture, you started disassociating from the music of that and started listening to folk music. I'm wondering, is folk music still a thing for you? Or?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, when I have been very open about my history with mental ill health and addiction. And yes, so when I first started suspecting that I had a drug problem and, you know, I went cold turkey before the Beijing Olympics, I found dance music quite triggering. And so to stop triggering myself, like I had absolutely no idea about any of this. I was really just kind of doing it all myself. But I did start listening to more folk and more acoustic and more, you know, just kind of less arousing music to stop triggering myself. Absolutely. Like, I still love, you know, Angus and Julia Stone. I still love, you know, Sarah Blasco. I still love, you know, all of this old Sia. I do. Even though I've been living in the UK for many years, I still... Australian music still has a special place in my heart.
Also, it just strikes me that as someone who's grappled with esteem and where to find it, that you gave yourself over to a sport with human judges.
Yes, well, actually, I think that's why I did it. So because I have never really had the ability to build self-esteem, I was extremely dependent on other esteem, on external sources of esteem to make myself feel okay.
Like validating.
And exactly. So I was constantly looking for external validation. And when I found something that I was good at, and then I got feedback about myself in the form of numbers. So if I got an 8, I was good. If I got a 9, I was great. And if I got a 10, they thought I was perfect. So that's like crack cocaine for someone with low self-esteem.
As a stand-up comedian, I have no idea what you're talking about. External validation.
Totally.
What's that? What's it like to do a sport that's so difficult and so complicated and yet I think lends itself to being the biggest sort of armchair expert sport? Every 4 years I'm an expert on diving. I'm like, oh, I didn't like that entry. A bit too much splash. Thank you. Does it drive you crazy?
No, because, I mean, obviously being good at what I do, like, you know, if judges are impressed by what I'm doing, then armchair experts are impressed by what I'm doing. So I feel like I've got that
you've got that it, you've got them.
Bit of the market, like, covered.
Did you do anything really show busy that only you would know? That, like, a flourish that it was like...
Oh, in diving?
Yeah.
I did make an effort to be just a little bit prettier than everybody else.
A little bit.
And it worked.
Now, Afterglow's been on, it's had a dream run, hasn't it?
Yeah, I knew about Afterglow in London and wanted to go see it, but by the time I found out about it, it was all sold out. So, you know, that was disappointing. But then when I was actually approached about the Australian season, even though I live all the way, you know, over the other side of the world, when I found out about this opportunity, I was absolutely like, yes, I would love to. Like, yes, I will bring myself back to Australia in order to be able to do this play, because it had a great reputation. There was kind of something else that I also auditioned for. Very grateful that I didn't get it, because it would have meant that I wouldn't have been able to do this. So I was just, you know, it already had a fantastic reputation. It tackles some new subject material that I have not done before. I've never done a drama theatrical play in Australia before. All the stage work that I've done has all been musical cabaret. Mm. So this was different. It also kind of tracks along from what I have been doing most recently in the UK. I've been doing plays. The last play I did last year was in the West End, which, you know, was, and it was also quite a gay play. So, you know, it's just everything just kind of felt right. And also I've been looking for a reason to come back to Australia for a couple of years now. So this was perfect. And the fact that it was for something as interesting as this, I just, you know, I you couldn't get me here fast enough.
Yeah, well, it's bloody ace to have you back. And congratulations on the show. Afterglow is on from the 30th of Jan to the 8th of Feb at Chapel Off Chapel. You can head to midsummer.org.au for more information. Matthew Mitchum, I bet your bows at the end of the show are pretty elite.
I try to be very humble, and I don't. I don't do the even deepest bow out of everything. I've changed. I've grown. I'm humble fish now.
Beautiful work, Matthew Mitchum. Thanks so much for being here.
Triple R on FM, digital, online, and via the app.
Breakfast is in 2026. We're joined by charismatic hustler Megan McHugh.
Hey.
Aww, thank you. What a welcome. Welcome to 2026, where I will be channeling the same ambition that Marty Supreme has.
Right.
Yes, I'm here to talk about the ping pong movie, but it is so much more than a ping pong movie. It's tragedy, it's comedy, it's epic, it's intimate. All right, let's jump in. Wow. So it is the solo outing of Josh Safdie, who's one half of the Safdie brothers. If you're familiar with their work, you'll know that their films are great to just pop on for a relaxing Sunday afternoon. No. They're not at all. They're very high octane.
Anxiety inducing.
Lots of yelling over each other, lots of unexpected plot turns. So the Safdie brothers have done films like Good Time with Robert Pattinson, Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. And they've recently decided to kind of part ways and do some solo directing outings, and so Marty Supreme is Josh Safdie's film that he's solo directing here. So, all right, let's begin. We start in New York, 1952. Now, time and place are pretty important here, actually, and they underpin a lot of the themes. We meet Marty Mauser, played by Academy Award nominee Timothy Chalamet, and this character is loosely based on Marty Riseman, who's a real table tennis player. So Marty is a shoe salesman who's already in quite hot pursuit of his dream, which is to become a table tennis champion. But that is sadly at no matter the cost to himself or others, his friends, his family, anyone basically. And speaking of cost, money is of course the pathway to the various tournaments and competitions that he needs to pursue. And so we watch Marty try anything and everything to get the funds he needs. And in the course of his anti-hero's quest, he crosses paths with a faded starlet played by Gwyneth Paltrow. He trots the globe as part of a crazy halftime show, and he hustles, steals, tricks, begs, everything, and needless to say, gets in way over his head. But, I mean, the key thing here, we're very much in the realm of unlikable protagonists, as you can probably tell. Most of the trouble that Marty finds himself in is due to his own foibles, like his own impulsiveness, short-sightedness, selfishness, and his ambition to a fault. Like, that is the whole theme that this whole movie is about, ambition, and the ways it can be for better or worse. So this is definitely not your traditional underdog feel-good story where there's, like, a plucky young man who tries really hard and comes from a humble beginning, but, you know, you root for him and you feel good when he succeeds. Watching this movie is, like, more like watching like a cat who's fallen into a bucket and like keeps scrambling, trying to get out, but then jumps in the bucket and then keeps scrambling, trying to get out, like over and over and over for like 2.5 hours. Wow. However, I was thrilled me. I loved it. Very engaged the whole time, even though Marty is, he's selfish, he's narcissistic, he's full of this like very, I feel, masculine focus that's like emboldened by this like confidence of youth, like a recklessness that's like everything will just work out, it'll all work out, which, you know, I think is quite an interesting thing because we're also of course in a post-war era as well, and Marty is a Jewish character, and so I do think that his kind of Jewish identity is also part of his quest and is sort of part of his motivation as well, and the movie does unpack that. And, you know, he's not nice. Like, he will take advantage of everyone in the quest to reach this bigger purpose that he feels he has in the world, which is to be table tennis champion and defeat his nemesis, Japanese table tennis player Koto Endo.
Mad.
So,
I've heard there was some analysis, I don't know what you agree with it, is it that it might be an allegory for movie making?
Well, I think it's an allegory for, like, ambition, and I think a lot of people have made parallels between Timothée Chalamet's approach to acting and his acting ambition and the ambitions of Marty in the film. And, I mean, Safdie has spoken what he feels the themes of the film are, which I'm not going to say because I do think this is a very rich story. Despite how ridiculous and wild it is, there's a lot here that I think you can take from it. And so even for me to step through parts of the plot, I think would be ruining some of the surprise that you would get when suddenly the movie goes from sort of what is a traditional early story of, okay, we're building up this character, we're building up what his goals are, what his dreams are, what he'll do to get them. Oh, we've taken a sharp left turn. Something's happened. There's violence. Craziness is about to ensue, and I can tell. I don't want to ruin any of that because it took me by surprise the way, the sort of route that the movie took for where it wanted to go.
And it's been interesting seeing Timothée Chalamet talk about, or even on speeches when he was nominated or accepting awards for playing Bob Dylan, and he was kind of like proud of his hubris.
Yeah, so I think that's what's interesting is I actually quite admire, well, not admire is the wrong word, but I think it's quite interesting about how earnest he is about his own, the work that he puts in and his own ambition. And I think it's interesting to kind of look at that juxtaposed with Marty in the film, who has a similar ambition at, you know, the expense of everyone around him. And so it is a very interesting way to think about how Timothy's ambition feeds into the role of playing a character whose ambition is his own downfall in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that it is billed as a traditional sports film. There are sports elements in it. I do think, you know, it's probably not as much ping pong as you might be expecting, but so it does have some traditional markers of that, but it's really more about, like, money, power, the post-war condition of Jewish Americans after World War II, and personal legacy. And I think that's something that Timothy cares a lot about from what he's said. And it's just about a prideful young man who may or may not learn lessons. Like,
so good.
He's just out there doing his thing. You watch him continue to make bad decisions and mistakes, but you understand why he's doing it. Like, he's so clear about, and there's something about that honesty as well. Like, I mean, Marty's reprehensible in some ways. He's never outwardly malicious, but his disregard for others is what you're like, how can you just be?
Is it kind of like yeah, I guess some classic examples would be like Shooter McGavin or Ernie McCracken from Kingpin.
Yeah, I think it's like, this character is so honest, though, about what he's doing.
Okay.
Even if you don't agree with it, you're kind of like, okay.
And there's something charming about that?
I don't know if it's charming, but I think you can respect it
right
in a way. And honestly, I think it's one of those roles where I can't imagine anyone else doing it. Timothée Chalamet does a great job. He is a really good actor. He, like, embodies this character. He carries this movie. Like I said, Marty's not an easy character to pull off. And you can dislike him and still want to watch him. And I think that is a real gift. He has, and Timothy, they've kind of scrapped him up a bit. They've given him like a monobrow. They've made his skin worse. And he has this like scrappy, like rabid ferret energy that you can just tell, like he's propelled by his own sense of self in a way that you're like, gosh. Okay, but then you look at it in the lens, the historical period, and you're like, okay, why is he embodying this? Why does he feel so strongly about pursuing this dream? Mm. And it seems so mundane in a way, but Safdie kind of really does infuse the whole story with these themes that you start to think about. And there's cutaways and there's certain characters that are included in the narrative where you start to understand a little bit about what he's saying and why it's set when it's set, and, you know, Marty's character, why he is, you know, the way he is.
Yeah.
So If you're the other Safdie brother, are you nervous?
Well, Benny did direct The Smashing Machine, which I've not watched. So maybe that's something. I'm not going to watch it. But this film shares a lot of the markers of the Safdie brothers' previous films, like Uncut Gems. Like, it's actually a little bit more chill, probably, than Uncut Gems. So for me, that gives me a sense of, I mean, I don't want to make any, I don't want to go on the record saying it or this, but I will continue to watch Josh Safdie's movies, I feel. I think this movie shares some of the things that people appreciate about Uncut Gems and Good Time. I can't speak to, what the other brother's doing, but I think I like what Josh Safdie's about and I like how he pulled this movie together. Also, if you do like the movie and you watch it, look up the alternative ending that
they're going to do. Get out of town.
It is, well, don't look it up before you see the movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, they really were just taking the creative process wherever it would go. And then the studio said, no, no.
Right.
we shan't be doing any of that.
Were the studio right? Or
I personally feel they were right because I liked the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the ending is ambiguous in a way that I enjoy, where you can think, what is going through his mind right now?
Right. And not to go way too deep, but the music doesn't match the era. Is that right?
Yeah. So the music is done by Daniel Lopatin, also known as OPN. And it's kind of, there's a lot of really great, like, synth villain music drops and kind of crazy music drops as well. There's a bit of, like, not diegetic music. It's like the opposite of that, sorry. So, interesting, like, music over top, and I think it works really well. I actually think that, the ping pong matches have their own kind of synth score behind them. I think it works really well to pull it together. I will say, like, I heard someone describe Safdie Brothers movies and this kind of movie, it puts you in a sense of fight or flight for, like, the whole time, and I think that's a great description.
Yeah.
But it's, if you can sustain that, I think there's a lot here.
And this is the sort of film you want Hollywood making as well.
Absolutely. I think it's entertaining. It won't be for everyone. Like, if you've seen maybe Uncut Gems, like, and you didn't like it, there's not going to be much here for you, honestly, because of the style and the way the filmmaking is. It's meant to be enjoyed and appreciated and thought about, but it's not meant to be, like, a chill ride.
Yeah, sweet. All right. So, Marty Supreme, it's everywhere.
It would is you recommend? Everywhere. I would recommend.
She just talking about it.
I had a whole long list.
I just wanted that final approval.
Give us some stars. For me personally,
I was like, loved it.
All right. We love you, Megan McHugh. Wow. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Woo! That's right. Triple R.
All right. I think we're all familiar. You get an email from an iPhone, and at the bottom it says, this sent from iPhone.
Yeah,
we know about that. But just last night I noticed, and maybe this has been brought up on Breakfasters before, but I'm new here. An email from Jace. And at the bottom of that email, von meinem iPhone gesendet.
Yes.
What's going on there? Are you a spy?
Yes. I'm trying to. So it's actually. Yeah. So I used to live in Germany.
Right.
And it's probably a Dr. Jen trick, maybe, to get my brain to think in German. I always just keep my phone in German. Kind of annoyingly puts lots of stuff, like email signatures or stuff that you want to be in English in German, but it's also, it's just nice. I like it.
Yeah. It reminded me of something very embarrassing. Why not? I'll
admit. Does that mean sent from iPhone in German?
Yes. I'm assuming.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And should say great pronunciation there.
Was Bronwyn. It?
Yeah.
Thank you. I think Kuss is German.
It is. Do you know what it means?
Kiss.
Yes. Mm. Brant, you could
I've also been told it means vagina in Arabic, so there you go. But
yes, Bronwyn, whenever I see your name, I really want to say kuss.
Oh, you can. I think it was kuss, and then maybe around, I don't know, the 40s, they went, oh, no.
Definitely kuss.
Don't say it like that. No, it's cuss. I met a Dutch girl and I really wanted to impress her. And I was like, I'm going to learn Dutch. And Duolingo wasn't enough. And I was like, no, you got to go full immersion.
Yes.
So I changed all the settings in my phone to Dutch to the point it was unusable.
And you have to know your phone well.
You've got to, I couldn't change it back because I couldn't read the Dutch.
Damn.
And I did have to get a new phone.
Impressive, though.
She stopped talking to me. She wasn't that impressed.
No.
And it's like Dutch, German. It's like close enough to English that my messages did just look drunk. Like whenever it was auto-correcting back into Dutch, it was like kind of a word. Yeah.
I love Dutch. It's such a beautiful language to listen to. It reminds me of Scottish people speaking German. in a way. It's got all
very
the German
specific.
Words.
Yeah, the German words in a Scottish accent, you reckon?
Yeah, it's kind of got the Anglo spelling, I guess, but then it's got lots of oohs and ohs.
Yeah, I thought I could do it. I couldn't do it at all. I went in too hard.
How is the sucking up supposed to work? Was it the idea that you would, the knowledge of your phone being in Dutch that you didn't understand, be impressive? Or was there something about what you were sending that would
I thought it would help me learn Dutch faster.
Yeah.
But it just meant I couldn't use my phone.
Yeah.
Couldn't function in
so
society.
So now I can't even use Duolingo now. I can't even get there. I'm looking for the owl. I can't open the phone.
Is this people, both of you have done it. So is this more common than I realised? People making their lives inconvenient to learn a language?
Maybe
isn't
not
it all
Australia.
Learning inconvenient?
Yeah, but like, yes, it is. But in terms of, you know, something that is ordinarily easy and flippant, but you're making it a challenge.
Yeah, what's it? That's probably.
Well, I guess the thing is, especially here, is like you don't. If you were in Europe, you would hear maybe a lot of German or French or something or Spanish. It'd be easy to access it. But here it's like it is just a lot of English. So you're like, what have I got that I can make another language? And there's a heap of words in this computer, so I'll make that.
Do the Dutch keep the QWERTY?
I don't think so, actually. Yeah. Oh, maybe.
Gee, you really screwed yourself up.
Yeah, I really did.
Oh my God. Actually, no, they do. But there is actually someone on the text line might be able to tell us out here. The German one is slightly different.
Because of the accents or?
The accents and like double S's.
S is fun.
Yeah, that one's fun.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of those inflections, I guess. But I think.
So are you fluent?
I was chatting to someone from Germany recently and they described my German as Party Deutsch. So,
which is, I think, better than fluent, right? What does that mean? It's like you can't hold that much of a conversation, but you could order some pingers. Is that what
you could be great at yelling in a loud bar?
Yeah. Great at parties, not so much in Parliament, probably. Is the way. Yeah, and it's kind of
Deutsch.
It's time stamped. So a lot of my German, you know how some words come in and out of fashion? A lot of my words are from like 10, 15
years ago. You're a time capsule for a decade ago.
Yeah. With
that is fun.
Banging on about Coney.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, that's all I wanted to ask you today.
Languages.
Languages.
I just want to ask just quickly, did you get any points at all?
Nah.
Oh, my God. What a
it was a little holiday romance thing that never, you know, we both went home and it never kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Occasional postcard?
No postcard.
It's really gone off the rocks.
I should have started on postcard and worked my way up to the phone. I did learn a little bit of German in primary school. We had a language teacher and she taught us German, French and Japanese, which I thought was pretty impressive.
All kiss vagina.
Well, actually, she did bring a French exchange student in one day and unfortunately for that French exchange student, her name was Fanny.
That's it.
Which, looking back now, I feel awful about. But when you're 11 years old, that's the funniest thing you've ever heard in your life.
Yeah. Can't wait for that.
Oh, my God. The class lost their minds and she was so confused.
At the puerile, feral Ipswich kids.
Pretty much. The teacher kept pretending like, what's so funny? But what's funny? And we're like, Fanny.
No.
Yeah, anyway. Sorry about that, Fanny.
Because it does, when you're in the US, I think Fanny and bum get switched around. So you'll have a fanny pack instead of a bum bag.
Yes.
The world.
But wow.
It's very rude who's on first.
Easy to get lost in translation, isn't it?
Melbourne's own Triple R.